The Effenrad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Check out their new movie, Evergreen, at youtube.com/Vans. Season 6 of Effenrad is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, Anon Optics, Crow's Nest Barbershops, Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC, and Stance Socks. The Boardroom has been a staple in the Vancouver snowboard scene since the beginning. The Boardroom carries the best selection of the best snowboards at guaranteed best prices. Check out one of the Boardroom locations in Vancouver or North Vancouver, or shop online at boardroomshop.com for all your snowboarding needs. Use offer code EFFENRAD10 for 10% off regular priced items and EFFENRAD5 for 5% off sale prices. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, Vancouver's premier snowboard shop. Support for Effenrad also comes from Grouse Mountain, Mount Seymour, and Sun Peaks. Sun Peaks is located in the interior of British Columbia, which is famous for light, dry powder. It's Canada's second largest ski area with 4,270 acres of terrain, three mountains surrounding a European-style ski-through village with 13 lifts, 138 trails, and over 20 dining options. It's the best ski and ski-out accommodation with no need for a car in BC. They've got winter activities up there like dog sledding, snowshoeing, and more, with 37 kilometers of cross-country ski trails, and most importantly, uncrowded, minimal lift lines. They're a full-service resort. You should check them out, Sun Peaks. Ben Billock is an incredible snowboarder to watch ride. His parts are well-rounded, he's meticulous, and if you're lucky enough to ride a feature he's created, then you know he takes extra care to build it properly. It was a lot of fun talking with a true snowboarder's snowboarder, Ben Billock, a few weeks ago here at my place. Where are you working right now?
I mean, I work construction, so I work everywhere, but out of Squamish mostly.
Yeah. And are you on new home builds or are you on renos and shit?
Most, just anything, really. Tiling applies to anyone who wants a nice bathroom.
Oh, sick, with the tiling. Bunch of those Man Boys guys do tiling, don't they? Hear them talking about that.
Belzil's been doing that, but it's because he's flipping houses, I think. Oof. Or like just into doing it himself, no matter what he does, right?
Yeah. That's smart. There's certain people that just, they get it right away.
It seems like the kind of guy who studies and just finds out how to do it.
I don't know him at all, but my buddy Gentle that I ride with grew up with Belzil, and he's like, Belzil's straight and narrow. He's not like a crazy party guy. So he's the kind of guy who's got it together with like that life plan shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you ever interview him, try to think of curveballs for him because he's probably so prepared for like the classic stuff that you got to probably come at him sideways and take him off guards maybe.
I had a really fun time with Mark Castongay. He came with notes and I was like, have you always been this organized? He's like, I think anybody who's a professional at anything, at any point in their life, is organized like this. And I'm like, not me. Oh, my God. I'm the wing it guy.
But see, I'm kind of, I guess in snowboarding too, I didn't listen to that interview yet. But if I'm doing something that I actually care about, whether it's snowboarding or anything, like even if we're just making sandcastles, I'm going to be like, okay, hold on. Let's make a plan and let's go get the right shovels and kind of like take it a little too far for some that are just like, I don't know how to explain that, but like they didn't expect it to go that far.
I'm looking across the table at someone. I think like we're on opposite ends of that spectrum. Like I go with no plan, like not even to the top as I'm walking up to the jump. I don't have the plan yet. Sometimes I don't get the plan until I'm on my way there.
I mean, I guess that's a skill.
I don't know if it's a skill. I know it's the way that I've lived my life and I'm okay with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had such great friends that are the other way because I admire it.
It's a balance, right?
Yeah.
You appreciate what you don't have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You could go a little bit closer to your mic or pull it closer to you.
I'm just worried of...
I cut it out.
Okay, you're capable of?
I can. Yeah, yes. I cut it out. Yeah, I will go through every episode and I'll cut out everything that is unpleasant.
Well, I hope you won't delete the whole thing because you're like, this was unpleasant.
Ben, it was so great to meet you. The first time was at Jess's place. And she had said, hey, this guy listens to your show. And at that time, which is what, 2-3 years ago now?
Yeah, two.
It was very rare for me to meet someone that had listened to the show. And I was like, wow, really? It's funny. I'm like, does he like it? You know?
Well, like, enough to listen to all of them up to that point, right?
Oh, wow. So. That's incredible. That's an honor. I'm stoked. Because then I went back and looked at your history and I was like, holy shit, he's in that Videograss movie that got me back into snowboarding, which I was like, oh, this guy's a legit, straight up incredible pro. The nice thing about the editing too is I can edit you out
separately.
Yeah, totally. I'll take this out too. And then all of a sudden I was like, shit, I want to interview that guy. Of course I do. And then the Dinos thing and everything, you've had like a really incredible career in snowboarding.
I mean, more than I ever expected, I guess.
Yeah, you didn't plan it out when you
kid? No. I think where I grew up being a pro wasn't really, it really wasn't something on the radar. Like, I snowboarded the golf course, you know? So I could be thinking of the older guys who boarded at the same place, thinking they were almost as good as those in the movies.
Sure.
But it wasn't like, oh, why aren't you trying to do it? Like, it wasn't in anyone's perspective of like, let's go that route.
Where,
I think.
What city did you grow up in?
It's South Shore of Quebec City.
Wow. Yeah.
And yeah, the golf course was the closest bump.
Yeah.
But I think it wasn't until early 2000s when, you remember when Ruzzingo was pushing hard and they were doing that rail tour?
Yes.
And in that same period, there was this little local magazine that had an interview with the team manager. And he said, what do you want to put in your sponsor me video?
Cool.
And that year was the first year we started filming on the hill just for fun. That was first time I had access to a camera with our friends. And I think it just kind of made me think, oh, I guess I have footage. And this guy's telling me how that he expects people to send it out to people like him. And that kind of got the ball rolling a little bit, at least in my head of like, okay, maybe we could. And riding Stoneham and seeing like at that point having a season's pass and meeting other people my age doing the same thing. And some of them getting hooked up slowly, I guess you progressively start thinking that, I don't know, maybe you could get a half off board or
yeah.
Whatever the deal is at the time.
Yeah, getting some shop sponsor.
Yeah, and yeah, I didn't even have the shop sponsor first. That's the thing.
Oh, that's incredible.
And my first board sponsor was with Rome when they first started.
Wow.
Like Laurent and I kind of, like he spotted the brand because he had, I think he was subscribed to magazine, so he knew everything, right?
Yeah.
So he was my information for what was coming up. And he's like, there's this new brand. I sent out my little part. You should do the same. So I did it and we kind of both got on.
Wow.
But the deal was cost. So it was $350 a board, which was more than I would pay for a board normally.
Yeah.
Because I would always get my boards in April or March or whenever they were on clearance sales.
Of course.
And that year I was like, I'm doing it well. So I bought two boards, one for pipe, one for jibs. And so it cost me like so much money to be sponsored, which I don't think there's too many people who had that phase of sponsorship, but it gave me like I belong to something, to a movement. And Rome at the time was like super based on AM riders. They had more AMs than pros. Jesse Fox was on it, but everybody else I didn't know. But I was like, you guys are cool because you're on that list. And so that was kind of how, and just from that, it was like, okay, how do I get the board actually for free? And then how do I get more stickers? And just like slowly went up, but it was never, now I want the cover or like the ultimate goal of getting the cover or getting the veto part in MacDog or...
Right.
Like it, yeah, it was step by step, really.
How did the Deja Vu crew, like, how far back does that, like, where does that start? Does it start back in Stoneham?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like different crews.
Yeah.
That, like, Laurent, myself, and the Demers brothers who ended up, like, pursuing Brothers Factory a little further.
Mm-hmm.
They turned into filmers. And so there was us and some other guys that didn't go as far. And then you had like Greg Desjardins that was making his own videos that had Alex Quentin alongside. And like, so it was like a gathering of little pods, basically.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, I mean, and then we ended up writing together, but it wasn't until Sugar Shack 1, Sugar Shack 2, they were trying to, well, they asked everyone for footage, basically. And then we just slowly got together more and more through the years.
It seems to me that the friendships that you guys had that were based in this integrity of being able to tell each other, like, that clip's okay. It's good. I've seen you do better, is a part of a super pro formula that I don't think that there's anybody out there that's had like an anchor part that doesn't have that kind of discipline to, you know what, that was a hard trick. Okay, I'm going to, you know, either I know I nailed it, you nail it that one time and then you're done, or you're like, I almost got it. I know this could be in the movie, but
it's funny because there's that, when you almost get it, you slip off a little bit and you kind of hope that it's good sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you're either scared or there's something to it. But it's funny. Again, yesterday I was talking to Nick and I think he brought up Etienne Gilbert and I'm like, oh, that's the guy who made us be judgmental of ourselves. Like I was 14 or 15 and we would be early season jibbing at the arena with Zamboni Snow.
Yeah.
And he just so happened to be early season jibbing there too. And I don't know, like he would just be very welcoming, but he would also say, oh, you were a little bit like starting on your nose and ending on your tail. And just those details that we all knew felt like not as solid, but he kind of made it clear that this is not as good as when you don't do that, basically. Like not so much like you suck or you should do it that way, but like,
right.
Did you notice that you didn't do it as good? I mean, I don't remember the wording, but I just remember that feeling. And he was the biggest pro that we could have access to and very professional in everything he did. Like, and especially if you look back, like he's so square and so solid.
Yeah. And, yeah. That's so dope.
And not knowing him very much at a time. Like
yeah.
He was that not super pro yet, but like he was up there for us and eventually getting to know him and hearing stories of him. His reputation is the guy that isn't scared of telling you to fuck off or like just like I don't like you and that's that. Just be direct, you know?
Totally.
So it's funny that he's also the reason why we were all direct to each other.
That's really fucking cool. And do you feel like you're a bit lucky? Like have you been with other crews or seen other people that are filming that you're like, wow, they're a little bit lazy compared to the, you know what I mean? Like, it's not even a laziness. It's like, you might not even know.
It's a different standard, but funny fact, like when Laurent, Greg and Will started filming for Rome for the first one.
Yeah.
And that's just me hearing the stories, right?
Right.
And John Cavan was filming that video. And I guess it became like there was the Montreal good because he had Max Legend and Yann Dauphin. That was Montreal good. And then you had the Quebec good. That was like a step, I guess, over in like being precise.
I love that. I love that.
And I mean, they were killing it. But it's funny how it changed probably those guys, like the Montreal good. Those guys probably now wanted to get to that Quebec good, I guess.
Yeah. It's incredible because you're dividing a province that for us out here
is the same, right?
Is the same. Even saying Quebec City, like I know that there's a big difference between Quebec City and Montreal, but it all falls under that Quebec thing.
But you know what, especially at the time, like that was obviously pre-social media and like having, you would know the whoever was from the different region just because of like the contest here and there every month or so.
Mm-hmm.
But in Montreal, you had an actual scene.
Right.
It was basically, not that I was here, but I would say it was the equivalent to like what Vancouver or Vancouver Whistler zone is compared to Kamloops.
Of course.
You know, like,
yes.
This is where the reps are. This is where the scene is. And in Quebec, you had the reps, but you didn't have the distribution. So you were closer to your to your goal of getting noticed, basically. You would go to Montreal and there was an actual scene. There was pro hoes. There was like just that it something we didn't have.
I hear you totally. One of the things you're reminding me of is I sat in a barbershop chair at one of these Crow's Nest barbershops next to Emmanuel Krebs. And he did for the Quebec City scene something that I don't think there's many individuals that have had as big an impact on their local scene as that guy, right?
It's funny because I met him a few times, but like it was way past the time that he was back east. And
right.
Like I don't know him enough. Like that'd be interesting.
You're going
to
love his story. It's unbelievable.
Because he started the shop and the skate park way
he
back,
did,
right?
When he was like 14 years old. Maybe he's 15, 16 years old and rented a space and opened the first skate park in Quebec City. Like, whoa. You're going to love it. You're going to love hearing it.
I'm excited because it's like a legendary status. I was too young when that went down.
Yeah.
But I heard of it.
Yeah.
Like through my childhood, really.
Yeah. I love hearing when people bring up names of guys that I'm like, oh yeah, I think he's going to be on the show soon. Chris Brown was saying that Emmanuel Krebs got him on Solomon or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He was in charge of it for a while, I think.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So you come up in Quebec City. Who have been the most influential guys to come out of there? You're saying Etienne.
But for me, I think it was more growing up, like actual local guys.
Got it.
That were in my hometown. Because I talk about the golf course like it's nothing, but there was an actual scene there.
Cool.
Like of like ditch riders and just people who'd never go to the ski hill, really. In the 90s, I think that was more common, right? Just ride what you have. And because it was the skate mentality, we didn't have skate parks, but there was plenty of skaters. So it was the same people.
Yes.
And some like on a Saturday, you could have like 20 snowboarders on that one bump at the golf course.
Yeah, that's so fun. Yeah, we had a couple of different places in my hometown. One of them was the golf course for sure. Never 20. Never 20 people. If there was 5 people there,
if we had 20, it was like some guys from the next town over that would come for that one weekend.
That's so dope, though. It was such a fun time to be a snowboarder because the progression, the same thing. Like you'd be at a session and somebody would learn a 540. You'd be like, oh my God.
That's true. But at the same time, it's kind of interesting how I don't remember very many days of actual riding. It was just like this was just what I did of my weekends.
Got it.
It was just regular living. It wasn't simply riding. We would go out there and build forts and build jumps, but then have a fire and hang out. Like it was, it was just everything. It wasn't just the boarding.
Yeah.
Although there was a lot of it, but for some reason, when I think back, there's like a few sessions, but a lot of just socializing with that crowd. And a bunch of those guys were 10 years older than me.
Right.
Like the guys that I looked up to were, at a different period in life, really.
Totally.
Like I was 12 and they're 22, you know? Like my parents were probably tripping.
Yeah, I can remember rolling up to ADNAC in Sudbury and digging like a hot tub, which was like just to sit in the sun because you're building a jump out of the snow, you're digging out of the hole. And one of the guys that kept showing up was like, he was in his 20s and we were like 16. And he's like, you guys want a beer? And we were like, yeah. Like, oh my God, we're going to have beer. Like this guy thinks we're 19 years old.
Well, see, those guys never tried to get me to, like it was never, oh, let's get him drunk. Or,
yeah, because you're 12, right?
I know, but like, you know, in some other scenes or like you've seen that in old skate videos where there's that young kid that's drunk there.
Yes.
Know? Yeah. So they never, and as they were drinking, smoking and whatever else, but they never offered or even like promoted it. Maybe I never showed sign of being interested.
Right.
But also I think I didn't want my parents to make me not go anymore.
Say because like you're there. Not allowed. Right.
Yeah. Because prior to that, when I was 9, they were the skaters in town too. Right.
Yep.
So if I wanted to go skate, even if it was next to my school where they were skating, at some point it came to the point where I was no longer allowed to go there because it was all teenagers there and I was 9.
Yeah.
So it was the same guy. So like years later when I was by myself with those older guys snowboarding, I didn't want that to happen again.
Nice. So you figured it out.
Yeah. I was like, I'll just be reasonable.
I remember at our local spot, which was like the highway went over a train track. And so there's like that, that's, you could picture how much of a hill that is because that's exactly how much hill it is. Mm-hmm. And there was a parking lot at the bottom. They'd push the snow. So now we've got a wide quarter pipe that's, you know, 8 feet high. And one time a train went by and it had wood on it and it stopped. And we just ran up, grabbed like a huge log, well, huge for Ontario, off the train. And now the quarter pipe had like a huge log for coping.
Sick.
That was like the best. And you're right. There was like fires and building forts. It wasn't just, you're not just completely obsessed with snowboarding at that point.
Well, we were, but I think we would show up there at nine in the morning and be there till four. So there's there's a lot of stuff going on, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a storm, so it takes an hour to even get from the road to where you're going to ride because you have snow up to your armpits.
That's so awesome.
And yeah, we'd show up with a few muffins, and that was our snack for the day.
So you get the first sponsor that you apply for. Like you send your sponsor me tape to Rome.
Yeah, but...
And you're on it. Oh, yeah, and you have to buy the boards.
Basically, whoever sent the tape got it.
Sure.
I think at the time, you know?
Because
I actually sent it to Rosignol.
Oh, nice.
And to them and to Tech Nine maybe the following year. But they all had the same program of buy it at cost. So,
yeah.
So there was no loss for them.
Right.
And if anything, they were making money because they would simply use their samples.
Sure, sure.
That had served their purpose already. And
it's actually a smart way to do it, is to be like anyone who's got the...
Who shows interest, really.
The interest to put together a video part at that time that's filming. Mm-hmm. They're into it enough that, yeah, sure, we'll sell it to them at wholesale.
And I think that's all most of us got into it.
Yes.
I think the deal was if you rode for a shop, you were more likely to get a cheaper or free board.
Because,
you know, as a shop person, you probably know, you were probably given boards just for being
year.
A guy that sells boards.
They used to put a list together. They'd say, okay, what board do you want? What boots do you want? What bindings do you want? What outerwear do you want? What gloves do you want? Like, you just put down your first, second, third choice. And at the beginning of the year, you just get all this free stuff. Mm-hmm. It was insane. It was insane. Like, so then you kind of do feel like you're like a sponsored rider, but really you're just a guy who works at a shop that sells the stuff.
But you're a part of the community and,
sure.
and the industry, really. So you're just as valuable for the industry in a way.
Sometimes
right?
more so, because if the rep comes in and says, oh, you got the Rossi board, how many Rossi boards you sell last weekend? And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, I got this obligation to these guys. And then it's so easy. People come in and go, well, what board are you riding? I'm riding this Rossi board.
Well, that alone is going to do something.
Right? So it sells 20 boards for the guy and he barely breaks even because, you know, you got to sell hundreds of boards to give one away and make money.
In your time, I'm sure they were doing fine.
They were doing all right. Yeah, the boards were selling hand over fist. We would sell out every year. It was a different time. So how did you move up the ladder? What kind of things did you have to do to get that free board?
Actually, that's Etienne again.
Nice.
Like he would live in Whistler, but would come to Quebec like early season and work at the board shop that was on my way back from school. So I'd sometimes stop by. I wasn't even sponsored by them, but I'd stop by and hang out a little bit. And one day he's like, do you know anyone who'd like to ride for Nitro? And I was on that Rome program that only gave me half off, basically.
Yeah.
That I was able to get free boards because I would break the last one. So I was always under warranty for like 2.5 years, 3 years.
Wow.
And then he was kind of getting like, Ben, the next one, I can just give you a board. Like it was getting to that point where, and I saw all my friends getting ahead and I was still in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And Nitro was kind of the only thing that I thought was rad at the time.
Nitro was super sick at that time.
Yeah. Like the graphics were like, I mean, superficial, but like I thought they were sick and there was a rad image with it.
Yeah.
Lucas Hoffman and like a bunch of AMs that were killing
it. Was that when the boards were black? Like
a lot of black, a lot of skulls.
Yeah. I loved that era of Nitro. Nitro is one of those brands too that it didn't really have a shitty time. Like they.
Until now.
The Jeff Davis. Days and those boards, like the Diablo and all that stuff back in the day, those boards were sick.
Yeah, that it was different, and I think it had that European flavor that gave you trust that it was good product.
Yes.
But then there was like a sick image. So anyways, like he's like, oh, okay. Because I said, oh, I would, you know. And he's like, oh, okay. All right, fine. We'll stay in touch. And he got a board for me. He got the Canadian distributor to reach out. And even like, I think a little later in the season. No, it started with him giving me one of his board.
Cool.
That he had there, like one of his used board that he was trying to sell there. He's like, just take that one. And once you get yours, you just give me the new one and you get to keep that one. And
oh, sick.
And eventually when he moved back to Whistler for the season, he went, the office used to be in Seattle. And so he went there and grabbed a few outerwear sample.
Cool.
That he gave me eventually. And he's like, yeah, here's
that's got to feel pretty good to start getting free. Like,
oh, it was crazy.
Yeah. That's epic.
Like I didn't even like most of it, but I made it work because I was so hyped. Well, yeah. First it came from a guy that I look up to and a brand that I was also hyped on. But yeah, that was sick.
How many years you do on Nitro?
From 2005, I think, to 2013, maybe?
Yeah, like 8 good years.
I mean, yeah. I have like a mixed feelings because I was in no position, but like coming up slowly, like step by step again, like not expecting too much, but then like got into video grass, things were, had a good part. And then the following year, oh, contract renewal. Oh yeah, we're just going to redo this, the exact same contract. But the same contract was $1,000 a month.
Right.
Not so, like it was fine the first year. I was hyped the first year, but it's like, hey, I just had the opening part of one of the few big movies this year.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas and we're supposed to sign it in a week, like within a week. And you tell me that you have nothing more than last year. And I improved my worth, I guess.
Totally.
And team manager at the time, I was really friendly with him. Like it was fine. We talked and he's like, okay, let me go back. So he was able to double it.
Oh, dope. Oh, that's good.
So it was just, I was just like, fuck. All right. And here's the industry, you know?
Yeah, because they don't know. Team managers don't even know.
Like, I think he just threw it out there.
I think Videograss was, like, to the people that snowboarded, I loved it. It was so
epic. He knew.
He knew.
Oh, yeah.
So he knew that
but
was...
It's funny because the fall prior to that,
yeah,
I was hanging out with him and John Cooley.
Yeah.
And they were both trying to get me to do the People movie.
Right.
Because they were already, like Nitro was already a sponsor of it and this and that. And Videograss was just like, what is that?
Sure.
But I did Videograss because all my friends were in it and I was trying to express that. And the following year, not everyone, but a good chunk of the people from the People movie switched over to Videograss.
Right.
So
right.
I guess it was understood as like, okay, this is good enough.
Oh, totally. Yeah. This is the first year that I've ever thought about it, but the difference between filming for a movie and you're with your friends versus, okay, you're going to be with this project over here and it's just like a roll of the dice of who you're crewed up with.
But is one
nuts.
Of the big part of it is that the reason, the way I understood it, is the reason why I was in Videograss was because when Laurent was approached for it, he said, I'm doing it if Ben's doing it.
Oh, sick.
So from what I remember, that's what...
Yeah.
So, like, who am I to not follow up with it, right?
No, of course. Well, I'm just saying, to me, I never thought about it before. Like, what it would be like to roll up to some spot, right? Like, so there's always a hierarchy of people at a spot. Who's going to build it? Who's going to go first? The Rochambeau, the respect. Like, Bo Bishop was talking about, like, casing the Duffy, right? And he was up there with just like random people, as opposed to being there with your crew, where your crew would be like, oh, that's not fast enough, or oh, it's not built yet. Like he's up there with just some random crew and the guy just pats it down a little bit and goes, yeah, I'm not going first. And now he's stuck there going, wait a second. Like, okay, I'm a pro. I can do this. But he's like off his game because he's not with his friends. He's not in a... And when you're flying halfway around the world and you're at some spot and you're putting your life on the line, you know, like having Laurent there, it's like this is the same thing we've been doing for 10 years together.
For us, because it was Laurent, Louis, myself, and then eventually Alex joined in. So it was like a pretty big chunk of our initial crew was
so
we were still together. So that I think that was an easy... intro to the real industry in a way, the American side of it.
Yeah.
But as years went on, like we got split a little bit, and I definitely had a taste of like what it was to ride with people who had different visions. And like I was saying earlier, like I take things pretty seriously. If I'm building a jump, like I'm going to do my best to build it nice and take the time to do whatever it takes to do it. And for some others, it's a different approach. They'll think it's just fun and game. And you're like, no, I'll actually try to get a trick on this, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just like a practice backflip jump.
Yeah.
It may look like it, but if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, then yeah, let's all share this. But
I love, you're reminding me right now, I love the fact that you were at that Mikey LeBlanc air to, what would you even call that? That ginormous air to flat. That one year he did all those airs to flat and it was like, he was such a hero to me for doing his own thing, completely saying, fuck you, industry. I don't care what's going on out there. This is what I'm doing. I love this.
But if you look back at even Decade.
Yeah.
The movie Decade.
Yes.
That's kind of what he's doing.
It's true.
He ollied over one of the rails that JP and all those guys were getting sick tricks on.
Yep.
And he just ollies over the rail down and does a creeper or like on the windowsill. Jumps off a tree, like just random stuff. And at a time, like he was one of my first favorite snowboarder because like I didn't know at a time that that stuff was different, but something out of that felt energetic, I guess, or like playful.
Creative.
Which is funny because it's the opposite of how I snowboard. My stuff is overthought and all that stuff. And and that spontaneous aspect of his riding was maybe what attracted me. But anyway, so he was my favorite for a long time.
And you helped him build that out, that spot for that iconic shot, for that like insane.
Well, I mean, I was just fixing the landing, but I've done that before. So to me, it wasn't like that. I mean, it was sick, but at some point, like through the years, I was like, maybe I was just one of the 10 people who did it. But then in his interviews, I hear him mentioning me.
Yeah.
I'm like, nice.
Yeah, dude.
Like he noticed in that.
It's
so
sick.
I'm proud of that more than the actual fact that I did it.
Right. It vindicates like those thoughts. Like it takes out the idea that there was 10 people doing it. No, you did it. And he appreciated it.
Yeah.
That's where, I heard it, I was like, oh, that's so dope. Because you've got a reputation around Seymour of building sick shit. And you could tell if it's something that you've made because it's good, you know? Because anybody builds, like even right now, you go ride Seymour right now, the side hits are, you know, there's a highway to a rock. There's a, you look and you go, look, that looks like I should hit that confidently. But if you do, then all of a sudden you're in the air and you're like, oh, that's to flat. Why does it look so good to flat? It's so weird. Yeah. So like when I met you and then I'm following your, like what you're doing, I'm like, oh yeah, he's like a master builder. You're building all that stuff in the backyard up in Squamish. I'm like, I remember doing that stuff beside the railroad tracks. It's so much fun.
Well, to me, that's just a part of how if I wanted jumps, I had to build it. That's just kind of where, like at the golf course, those older guys were building their big jumps.
Yeah.
So we had to, and I wasn't alone. Like that's just what we did. We built jumps. But then I think I stood out eventually, not that anyone noticed, but like I would start going on week evenings after doing my homework to go fix the jumps on nights that it was raining because I knew it would hold itself better.
Yeah.
So I'd just walk out there by myself, build a jump.
Me too. I've done that.
But not hit it till the next Saturday.
Yeah, because if you hit it, then you're putting a big track in a big soft thing and the track's there forever.
Well, that, but it was also nighttime. I couldn't snowboard even if I wanted to.
I had lights at that thing, so I was lucky. I would go there. I would go there every night. I'd walk from my house. It's like a kilometer away. I would steal a shovel, snow shovel, like a good one from one of the neighbors. And then I would remember where it was and I would bring it back and I'd put it back, you know, like for shoveling a driveway. I'd smooth it out all perfect and then let it freeze. And then it was better for everybody. It was so much fun. I love doing that stuff.
I got in trouble from my stepmom. One spring, I was able to build a backside wall on the side of a tee off. That I think I've only been able to do it 1 year because it got overgrown. That was just it. But it was in the spring when it's bright out for pretty late, right? But I reshaped it and it was people sledding and quadding or whatever, like just being all over the place. And I stayed just to keep an eye on the quarter pipe so no one would step on it.
Yeah.
And I got home at like 6:30 or whatever, like way late for dinner. And I got in a lot of trouble. And I was like, I was just guarding the quarter pipe. And I think back, like, what was she thinking? You know, what did that mean to her when I said that? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, it was a no good excuse. But like, beyond that, like, what did she understand from what I was trying to do there? Did she just hear it as like a weak excuse for being late?
Right.
But it was so genuine for me. And I still do it now. Like when we build the quarter pipe for ECS, I'm like, nope, no one's dropping in until it's ready.
Right.
Like we just salted it. Let's give it a good 20 minutes, not 10 minutes.
We need someone to do that because otherwise it just gets wrecked.
But you don't only make friends building quarter
pipes. No, you don't. It's true. It's true. Yeah, so, there is a dynamic between.
But and I think it's strange because I'm also from a BMX background a little bit, like mm-hmm. building dirt jumps.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's very similar to those super aggro guys that build skate parks.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just how they are. And that's respected and understood. And it's like, oh yeah, but he built it. Like, give him a break.
Yeah.
But in snowboarding, it's like, get out of here. You know, we want to hit this. Get out of there.
It's true.
I don't know if it's entitlement or just a lack of understanding that you don't just, I don't even know how to explain it. But like, my point of view is like, no, I just built it. Like if I say, not because I want to be the king, but just like, yeah. I just built it. So I'm going to say when we get to hit it.
Of course.
And not everyone agrees.
Again, we're on the opposite sides of this. I built a half pipe underneath the underground parking at Boardroom. And I skated it with the first sheet. You know, like it's dangerous. You're gonna put your foot through it. It's not ready. But I was just so excited. I'm dropping in off of a bendy 2x4 and skating back. Oh, the transition feels really good. I'm that guy. So
but
like
that's understandable that you want to hit it as soon as it is somewhat rideable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's
totally
not
makes sense.
It's not ready. It's not ready, but not at all. And also like you get overexcited and then all of a sudden you're alling on it and then your wheel goes through and you've wrecked all the work that you just did. And now you got to go get another sheet and start over. So
it did happen?
Oh, yeah, it has, for sure. And because all of a sudden the work stops, that's the thing that people don't realize. If you are making the quarter pipe perfect and then someone starts to hit it and then 50 people start to hit it, like nobody's working on it and it's not right yet. So, yeah.
But yeah, I guess I come from this, that era of like, if someone says so, I guess you go with it, whether or not you like it. Similar to the COVID restrictions, I guess.
Yeah.
Nobody likes that.
Nobody likes them. No.
It's like, well, I guess let's try that.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been thinking of it the same way we build quarter pipes or any snowboard setup.
Yeah.
Okay. Like you may not believe that it's going to work.
Right.
But let's build it all together. Let's all do this.
Yeah.
And let's find out if it works. But if you sit down over there and argue that it's not going to work, it's definitely not going to work.
Right.
Or it's going to take longer to find out whether or not it works.
Exactly.
So let's all agree on doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, if this lip doesn't send you where you want it to go, then we'll move on to a different feature and try again over there.
The ECS is super fun. It's super duper fun. It's very creative. It's at that perfect time in snowboarding where it's spring, it's light out late, the snow is easy to work with, and then you can get creative. And people are kind of over it with the season. They've been snowboarding and snowboarding and snowboarding. And this is just, from what I saw, the one that I went to, it's a bunch of guys one-upping each other and having fun.
Oh yeah, it's yeah, the best.
It's the best.
It's the best, and then it's the end.
It's the end, yeah.
Unless you live in Whistler and you keep on riding for a few more weeks, but it's like a weird mixed feelings. Like you're so close to those people for all those months, and then you hit the peak, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange feeling that we have with snowboarding that not too many other activities have, right?
I would agree with you there, because I'm old now, 47, and the number of times I've had like a great friendship with somebody where we ride every day together. And then spring comes and then we don't talk. Like even they stop answering texts. That's it. No reply even. And then it's fall and you're going to go and they've changed to something else. They're not going to snowboard that year. So I've gone.
Oh, you had those.
Oh, tons. Like I've gone through because who's 47 years old right now that's ridden 20 days in November in BC? Like none of my guys.
Probably people that you thought were nerds back when you were the hot shit at the shop.
No, I was not the hot shit at the shop. I was always the nerd. So that's it. That's where it is.
That's funny with time. And that's something, speaking of nerds, like nothing wrong with nerds. I'm pretty nerdy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was thinking about that today, how most pros or like semi-pros or whoever like was trying to achieve something in snowboarding that came through Whistler moved away and usually stepped away from that sport as well.
Oh, it's true.
Sometimes it's for physical reasons and that's fair.
Yeah.
But it's like they tried that and left. But those who stayed were never those who pursue it for like anything else than the joy of it.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And it's kind of strange how we, in some cases, they do succeed and become the greatest snowboarders in the world and they represent our culture. But then if you look at as a whole, all the people of that type that actually try to do it, like they're not in the culture really.
Yeah.
In a sense like that, because that was a big thing when growing up, I thought everybody was punk rock and super into the music, the skate, the snowboard and hardcore, you know, like
yes,
this is what we do and we do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started getting into snowboarding, because I guess music was always a big part of me growing up in high school and all that.
Yeah.
And then in snowboarding, I realized that everyone's relationship with the music was not the same as mine.
Oh, totally not. Yeah.
And that it took me years to actually like be like, okay, I guess I'm not going to make it look like music matters or whatever. I don't know. That was a strange thing. Like, yeah, you'll see like those Metallica shirts, like super classic bands that everybody's going to recognize. But like, I don't know where I'm trying to get to, but like really into another culture that to me was all as one, basically.
Yes.
But turns out, no, snowboarders are snowboarders. They're not necessarily music nerds.
Sure. Well,
there's a few exceptions, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'll like the Mark Castonguay one because he really felt like the same thing. Like, a brotherhood, like, okay, we like this kind of music, we skateboard, we snowboard, like we are this kind of person. But then, and this is something I'd love to talk with you about, Whistler versus Seymour, those are two completely different scenes, an hour apart. Like if you live in Squamish, you're equally distant from each one. But Whistler, from the very first generation, was charging. That was their motto, was we charge. We're going fast. Like if your binding broke, you're not with us anymore because we're charging. Like we're not going down. You couldn't go down to help a guy get his. You're not going.
But that's also why I don't ride Whistler in Blackcomb.
Me neither. Same.
Because it hurts my body. But it's fun to charge, but
right,
it's also impossible to do anything else.
Right. So
it's so steep that you have to go fast.
It's insane. Right. You're right. Well, for me, for years and years, I kind of felt like a bit of a failure that I hadn't made it as a charger. You know what I mean? And I kind of felt like Seymour was like second tier. It was like kind of a smaller thing. But no, Seymour is equal in what there is there to
it's
do.
It's different.
It's completely different. And riding the same hits over and over again and getting really, really good at freestyle snowboarding, you get good in a different way than what you're...
Yeah, I mean, it's... Rodney Mullen learned to skate on just like a pad of
exactly
concrete, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So Devin Walsh made a career of Mount Seymour. And there's a lot to be had. Like I rode top of Mystery to the bottom of Lodge Chair yesterday, and I was just reminded of how amazing Unicorn is just as a run. Like, it's an incredible run.
Yeah, when you know that there's no rocks on the side hits,
you're
happy.
Yeah, the North Shore has a lot to offer. That's not Whistler. It's a different pace and it's a different thing, but it's really, really fun.
When I lived in Whistler for a few years and then I started coming down to Seymour for events.
Yeah.
Can't remember why. But anyways, like I started going and just the drive up and starting to see snow, I was tripping already. I was like, this is sick to go from summer-ish weather to full winter.
Totally.
That alone, and then the scene and the size of the lifts, like how shrunk it looked from compared to Whistler.
Totally.
But I wouldn't say I fell in love, but like I felt like this was where I belong a little bit more.
Very cool.
But the scene there, it was like the party snake period, and it was so intimidating.
Sure.
Like I did not try to, I mean, I was pretty shy and my English was a little different.
Yeah.
But it was like, ooh. Like, I love the place, but those guys are scary. That was kind of how it was.
Yeah, I've always felt like an outsider at Seymour.
But I think it's like that wherever you go if you're not in it, right?
That's true.
And I'm in my 30s, and I feel like that even going to the Squamish skate park where I live. If I haven't been there for a few weeks,
yep,
I feel like it's no longer my place, right?
Sure.
And I've been skating there for almost 15 years.
Yeah, it's a great little skate park.
Isn't that crazy that yeah, feeling no, still is still existing? Even if I was to go back to my hometown, it's no longer my skate park.
Oh, of course. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But you would get used to it quickly and then you'd be that guy.
I wouldn't want to because it's horrible over there. But but it's just a feeling that never went away, really.
That's an interesting segue right there. The idea that your hometown is horrible, you know, like I've always kind of had that. Like I moved out here and a lot of my friends moved out here, childhood friends, and everybody moved back. And I'm like, how can you move back? Actually, my one childhood friend moved to Tofino. He stayed there. But like the draw of going home, we were talking about it earlier at dinner. There's family. It's cheaper, way cheaper. There's support. There's familiarity there. What has kept you out here when like great friends of yours have moved back?
Well, yeah, pretty much. At this point, everyone.
Right.
From where I'm from.
Yeah.
My last friend moved back two summers ago.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's because for as far as I can remember, as soon as I was told that the Vancouver area had snow year round.
Yeah.
It was, in my mind, the goal of this is where I should be, right?
Cool.
Access to snow at all time.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I feel like I'm not snowboarding enough anymore, or I don't chase it as much as I used to. It's almost like I never saw myself not being here. And since I don't really know why, what kept me here, but it was more like I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm where I wanted to be. Why would I go back to where is just where I started? Like I started in Quebec.
Yeah.
This is where my life started, but it was not necessarily where I saw myself growing, or like I didn't have like an image of, like it wasn't, not that it's bad, but it wasn't exciting to think of future considerations.
Or, yeah, like have a hunt camp and go yeah, to like the that lake
wasn't
yeah
that,
that
wasn't
stuff.
My yeah. my focus. Like everything was snowboarding, and obviously, like that has slowly shifted to more things.
Yeah,
like there's more reasons now why I like it here, and I'm at the point now, like 15 years in, that it's basically half my life. You know.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, I have all my friends over there, but I also have quite a few friends here.
Right.
So aside from my family, I don't know. But like I'm still like I'm not saying no to anything really. Like if there's something rad going on over there, if they want me to build hips all year over there, yeah. Maybe I'll go, you know? It's all about what you do and that's funny. I've been thinking about that recently. I could be anywhere as long as I'm doing these few little things.
Yeah.
Really.
What are your favorite things? What are the things you're doing right now?
Like when you interviewed Jess years ago?
Yeah.
The reason why you had to stop doing the interview because I was making noise outside. It's basically what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing with power tools.
Building stuff. Cool. Is that, that's all done, the sauna?
Yeah.
Finished it that year, so 2 years ago.
The sauna, yeah, I helped her finish the siding this summer, but it's been operational for longer.
Yeah, saunas are awesome.
I don't go in it. It's all hers. And I don't take credit for any of the work. She worked hard.
What about, have you checked out Mikey Rentz's portable sauna thing? That thing looks awesome.
There's a strange dynamic in Squamish where there's a lot of people who know each other.
Yeah.
Like I have a lot of friends that live real close, and the social scene, you don't interact with people as much. It's a very strange thing.
Yeah, there's so many crews up there.
I think people just stick to themselves, to their household a little more.
Sure. Well,
that I don't reach out, but like I live there two corners from one of my friend's place, and I never hung out with him in the evening.
Interesting.
It was daytime activities, and after dinner, we never reached out to each other.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's strange. It's like an adult life, no matter what age you are.
Yeah.
But maybe I should reach out. I don't know. It could be my fault.
You seem like a social guy, man. You're a really good, fun guy to hang out with, so.
Oh, I just don't, break the ice.
Yeah. That was so dope meeting you at that, because I was on a transition with the show with Jess. I want it to be like this. Like, we're talking very real about things that are important to you in your life, right? Like, and I remember I was getting pretty deep with her about like painful shit. And afterward, the three of us hung out and I was like, you guys get along like incredibly well. Like, better than...
Depends on the season.
Better than roommates.
Yeah, like, I mean, we've been a lot, like, aside each other for a while now, you know?
Yeah. How's she doing? I'm excited. We're going to do an interview again coming up in a couple of weeks.
You should.
A couple of days.
Now she's good. She's happy that she released that movie.
It's released. The Uninvited.
It's online. Like
The Uninvited.
Yeah.
Two, which is sick.
Yeah, so that's because she worked on that all summer, basically.
I love the style of those Japanese girls in it. It's insane.
Yeah.
To see that, it's like, okay, yeah.
Oh, they're
catching up.
Superior. It's not, catching up. The hardest thing is just when she needs like a certain type, hey, do you have any lifestyles shots of you not wearing sunglasses? And then she asks the question, and then the answer might not be what you just asked. So the communication was the hardest thing, but their footage, they're just...
It's worth going. Any listener, go check it out right now, Uninvited 2. I love anything that she works on because her integrity is the same kind of integrity that you guys had. Did she join your crew when she was doing that, like video part of the year, women's part of the year?
She was with Think Tank.
But did she know you guys? Like, were you reviewing footage and helping?
No, I had nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
And Think Tank is notorious for not showing anything.
Right.
Like, they do, like, Bertner will do the movie all by himself and no one sees anything.
Wow. Her part, still now. I don't think there's been a girl's part that's that good.
Yeah. I mean, controversial topic.
Yeah.
I think it was a standout, and anyone with that kind of energy is a fun part to watch, I think. And there's a lot of good snowboarders, but not everyone brings that. It could be the bales. I don't know what it is, but like there's a lot to it, you know?
I typically hate when they put bales in a movie. Like, I just don't like it from the point of view of like the general public loves bales. You know what I mean? Like if there was a snowboard movie that was the most popular movie in the world,
I think it's a balance.
It would be bales. It would be all bales. And people would be like, oh, this is the greatest movie of all time.
But then it's now failed compilations on YouTube.
That's exactly what I mean.
It's kind of a different dynamic. But I think for Jess, it's essential, at least at the time, it was essential to show that, like what she wanted. She wanted so much that she was willing to eat shit. Basically, it's not like someone cracking a skull down the stairs. That's an accident.
Right.
The other one is showing the type of writing that person's doing.
Totally. Yeah.
like Jess was just like, because we met when I worked at the Reuse It Center in Whistler for years, and she was a regular customer for a while, and she eventually worked there or applied, and then my boss was like, do you know that girl? I'm like, no, but she's here pretty much every day, so yeah, she's probably good. So we started hanging out, and she I think she showed me her first demo or whatever, and she's like, look at that dirt ride. I want to do the biggest dirt ride ever. I'm sure she's brought that up before, but like,
no,
that was her goal, to do the biggest dirt ride ever seen.
Oh, awesome.
Like that was her state of mind, and she's still like that. Like whatever she does, she wants to do it bigger and bigger and bigger. So that will bring some bales and that type of stuff, but that just shows what kind of mentality she has for her snowboarding.
Yeah, she's the best. The girls have to catch up because they haven't been supported. That's just the way that it's been.
But it's still like that. It's nuts.
It's still like that.
Like, honestly, it's as simple as saying you only have guys, or like 90% guys all the way up in the industry.
Yeah, 100%.
So they will get hyped on people that are more like them.
Of course.
So obviously they'll be more buddy-buddy with another kid that's also a guy, right? It's just like all dads want to have a boy.
Sure.
Maybe not all, but like it's pretty common reaction.
Absolutely.
Because they feel more like they can give to, or like more comfortable. I don't know what it is. I'm not a dad. You can probably tell me, but like
I can say with all honesty, I didn't think that I had that. I didn't think I had that. I had a daughter first, and I thought, great. Like, but when my daughter called and said, Dad, I'm going to be a big sister, which was such a wonderful moment in my life. I was at work. She calls. She's like, hey, I'm going to be a big sister. I was like, oh my God, that's so great. It's great. So that's how I found out that we're having my son. But then my wife at the time said, it's going to be a girl. Like, we had the ultrasound. It's going to be a girl. And I was like, ah, shucks. I was like, ah, no. And then she's like, I'm just kidding. It's a boy. And I was like, what? Oh, my God. I didn't even know I had that. But so you're absolutely right. It's going to be an unconscious bias that's put in us through just our culture.
That's what we know.
It's what we know.
And I think it's just normal. It's no fault of those individuals. But as long as you have that many dudes only in charge of decisions, that's what it's going to look like.
I think
right. So any excuses that one can have, saying they're not as good, not as this, this and that, it really doesn't matter in the end. Because especially now, like, I mean, or let's just say my favorite snowboarder was Mikey LeBlanc, but JP Walker was much better.
Right.
On many aspects. But
absolutely,
JP Walker was never my favorite.
I got you.
So let's just pretend like as a girl, yeah, you'll look at Thorsten and be like, yeah, he's the best snowboarder I've ever seen. But she can never relate to that person as much as that she can relate to Jess, Desiree, Dara, whoever you want to name, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And to suggest that there's only 30% of the market for the girls, or 20% or whatever the numbers
bullshit.
Are.
It's bullshit. That's just straight bullshit. Yeah.
Like, that should be a goal to increase it.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, it should be 50-50.
Who's on the planet? Who owns a credit card?
Right, right.
Bottom line, right?
Bottom line. Yeah. One of the things that I've, because after I talked with Jess, I went on rants with like Razman and people saying like, look, the only reason women aren't as good as men is because we've been just holding them back and not giving them the support. Like, if you look at it from a money perspective, when sports have equal money, they have equal competition, right? Like,
but you can also think back like thousands of years.
Sure.
You could blame it on religions.
Absolutely.
Like, you go back to the beginning of history, and that could be why, you know?
Yes.
And totally. In the end, and especially in this situation where when we speak snowboard industry, we don't even, again, like your skills have nothing to do with how successful you are.
True.
To a degree, you know?
Truth.
You have to look good and be influential.
Yep.
It sucks to use that word, but that's actually what it is.
That's the trap. And when we were talking about it at dinner, and you're like, hey, look, it's pretty straightforward. You do have to do these things, right? Like, you want that. That's what I didn't want to have to say. I don't want to be an influencer at all. Zero. I don't want that. to no, be in my...
But in your case, sidebar here, in your case is to make a product that people will listen to and get excited for whatever, riding Baker or riding the golf course. You know, like you want to bring that stoke into someone of, let's do this.
This is where it starts.
So that's what you're selling ultimately.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think same in snowboarding. So how excited were we when we saw people jib, whether it was early 90s or early 2000s, when people jib picnic tables?
So sick.
The simplest thing.
Yeah.
That everyone saw and thought of doing it. And then you're like, whether it's Rowan Rogers or JP Walker 10 years later, it's like, it's just a picnic table.
Right.
And yeah, it's that simple. But they were jumping buildings at the time too, right?
Totally.
So what made you want to do it was not necessarily the most skilled, focused stunt.
Absolutely. Yeah. So your favorite was Mikey LeBlanc for a time.
For as long as I had a favorite, probably.
The whole way through.
Until I didn't care. Like, I don't know. Like, after that, it's more like certain moves that one does. Like, oh, I want to do it like that. And then,
yeah,
like pick and choose and create your own hero.
I do really love the way that the kids are riding now, or even the in-betweeners, right? Like, because Sollers is no longer a kid, right? He's like your guys' age.
Yeah.
The last instant clips that I've seen of him, like, stomp, just so clean.
But isn't it, that's not even podcast related, but like,
yeah,
he is, I don't know if it's the Burton disease, but like, he is fucked, you know, he's so good.
He's so good.
But Burton doesn't use him in a fashion that...
I have no idea
that puts him up there, you know?
Right, right.
Or at least to my eyes.
Like, yeah.
It's all Red Gerard, you know?
Sure,
but
sure.
I don't think that that's podcast material, but like...
I hear what you're saying.
If we're talking Mark Sollers, like he does... I don't know, like I stopped questioning how things happen, at least on the Burton level. It's like, nah, I no longer care too much about that stuff.
Right.
Honestly, what gets me the most stoked is anything girls related.
Because
I feel like anything you do for Dara to get a clip or help Jess with anything, like anything that you help a girl do is a bit more of a landmark and like a stepping stone, something that has more potential to last.
Okay. Yeah.
Or like, and I worked with Lwif for a while, like helping him through his real snow and all that stuff. Like, arguably everyone's favorite.
Yes.
But helping a girl achieve something means so much more in the end.
Right.
I think.
I got you. That's the equivalent of Todd Richards saying, you know, the thing that's exciting him right now in judging contests isn't the guys. It's always the girls, because you don't know what's going to happen this contest. You know what the guys are going to do. You know the level they're at. It's moving slowly because they're so far ahead right now.
Well, that or you do expect... Mm-hmm. In a sense, you're like, oh, they didn't do anything better.
Yeah.
So unless it's always extremely new.
Right.
Your expectation's just different.
And the girls are advancing right now, like fast, which is...
But advancing, like I had a long argument with Logan Short once, progression versus evolution.
Okay.
And I was like, evolution is what you want, because as a rider, you get to different places without necessarily getting better.
Sure.
Because you have different influence, you have different visions and this and that. And anyone knowing Logan would be like, of course he's progression, you know, if he doesn't see the next thing, he's not impressed. But I think a lot of people that have, I don't know, you need everything, but I'm more on the evolution side of things rather than the progression.
Evolution allows for people to stay in the industry. Progression, it's a sharp drop off.
Well, progression, there's a scale somewhere.
Yes.
And you're either going up or you're going down.
Right.
You're progressing or regressing.
Totally.
Evolution is not on the graph.
That's so dope.
It's just a left to right, and it goes, and that's it, you know?
It's a really good I like it. I like it because there. Why would like the top pro today do something that's already been done? But that's evolution. The evolution is you're going to want to be a well-rounded rider.
But you could also call that regression.
You could call it regression
in
as
this
well.
Case. But the evolution brought regression. So you could.
Yes.
Like if your scale is whether it progressed or not, yeah, anyone can be put on that scale. But the reality is if my focus is to have an evolution within that sport rather than the progression, it's my choice. And you hope that someone recognizes it.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting thing. Like I've tried to progress in snowboarding and bring... like work hard at figuring out what hasn't been done and like pushing myself to do the same, maybe same trick, but on a bigger feature and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Which I would consider back then that I was doing like good parts or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would not get like, hey, good. Like I would not get like a message from someone random that I know. I would not get like, hey, good job. Or even from a team manager. Like you wouldn't hear any feedbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, as I started going more on like, let's say evolution path, that like even if my part was small and like much simpler, I was getting more feedbacks then.
People were like, this is great.
Like saying, oh, this is more you or whatever.
Interesting. Interesting. That's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that would go for anyone really. Like I'm sure anyone who looks at Lwif the way he rides now, like he does less backside 270s,
mm-hmm.
is just as fine for them because they like to see him reinvent himself. And same for Jake Kuzik. They probably love to see him hit backcountry jumps or like semi-backcountry jumps.
Yeah.
Rather than seeing or whatever. Like they just appreciate what those individuals offer, basically.
I think there's a long history of taking people to that brink. And then so they progress, and then... they stop progressing because it's as far as you could take it.
But like, you also want to just at some point you realize what matters to you, and it's no longer progression. It's
exactly.
Simply taking what you know to a different road. Like
yeah,
Craig Kelly is the best example. Like it's interesting how he's the most legendary snowboarder, and the path he took is being valued as like look how sick he is. He went from the jockiest to the most sole rider.
Yeah.
But now very few kids get that chance to, and when I say kids, people my age, you know, but like very few people get that chance to say, hey, you know what? I'm going over there. I hope, and will you guys follow that path with me? And it's like, oh, you know what? You're, no.
Right.
Or whatever it is, you know.
Well, Maria Thompson talked about it, you know, like she has where she's progressing. And even if she wanted to buy a sled and then learn how to sole ride out in Pemberton where she lives, which is so weird to have a rail rider living in Pemby, there's not room for her on the Burton team for that. That isn't where she fits.
That's not what she was hired for.
That's not what she was hired for. So like Craig was hired as a racer, actually. He was like, he was an overall world champion. So half of what he was doing was the racing and the other half was the freestyle.
But that's a funny thing on so many levels. But
yeah,
he wasn't appreciated because of his gate stuff.
No.
In a way, right? No one bought his Burton there because of how sick he rode the gates.
Yeah, because he didn't ride gates.
He proved the point that he was the best, but
yeah.
It's so interesting how that was essential, but most likely never sold a board.
Right. And that's the influencer thing, right? That's the, like, think about the fact that someone who's as good at snowboarding as Red also has in his contract some obligation to social media all the time. Like, why would you take a guy who's that good at snowboarding and then say, well, you know what? You got to spend some of your time, a good amount of your time on your phone.
Well, I think the biggest issue is that they expect that from all snowboarders now.
Everybody.
And just think back in the 90s, like, what if Peter Lyne was asked to do it back then? Like all those mega stars that created the industry that we know, right?
Yes.
Or Sean Palmer or whatever. Like what if they had to do that as their job?
An obligation.
Would they have been the top pros at a time. Or I just feel like requiring everyone to do the same thing is also going to make snowboarding very much the same.
That, I agree with you 100%. That's the measure that I'm not taking a stand against. It's not easy to game that attention system, right? Like there's algorithms and times to post and who to follow and what to like and what, and, you know.
But then again, I'm on Instagram just as much as you are, but
sure.
There will be someone that I appreciate. And then if that person posts too much of things I'm not interested in, I end up not keeping up with that person.
Of course.
So it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, and it's a delicate balance, right? Like, so it's not just straight up volume. It's not like I could just start posting a whole bunch of stuff and now the podcast grows. I got to post really good stuff. So then the amount of time that it takes to make really good content, like, fuck, I want to be sitting here with you having a conversation on microphones, making sure that the tape's not running out. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be sitting on my phone. I hate sitting on my phone, looking at my phone, trying to figure some shit out.
But then again, I think that's a sick approach, you know? And as an athlete, it should be respected that some of your best athlete, again?
Yes.
Or may not want to share everything.
I think that's good.
And a lot of people can relate to that as well.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. But as far as Instagram, like we all understand it. It's there. And I think I didn't know I'm not sure, but like, I think I got probably cut from my sponsors because I didn't have any social media at the time.
When was this? What year are we talking? We're talking
2013 or something.
Yeah. Five, 12? 10 years ago. Yeah.
I like, it was never said, but like, the first thing my friend Dave Burney told me is like, well, now get social media if you don't have sponsors, otherwise you're fucked. I was like, no, I don't. And that's kind of what made me get on Instagram trying to get sponsors, and it didn't work. So I guess it's useless.
How do you go from, okay, so what sponsors drop you? Were you still on Nitro at that time? Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, it was like the year we released Deja Vu.
Yep. Sick film, by the way. Unbelievable.
Well, the movie was, I think we had just done the premiere in Quebec.
Yeah.
But it wasn't available yet.
Yeah.
And I went back to Whistler. I bought a new truck because I was like, I'm set. Like, not I'm set, but like, I'm sure I can renew my contract for a year or two, right? Like,
yeah.
And I guess I was 25 or 26.
Is that your favorite part you've ever filmed?
No, but it was good, I thought.
Yeah.
And it looked good. The song was, I don't know, like it was like something to be satisfied of, right?
Yes.
Nothing to be shy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it wasn't even out yet. Dave Burney worked at 32 here and he warned me that 32 was most likely going to drop me because they were cutting everyone that wasn't doing outerwear.
Right.
Like they wanted to focus on head to toe people.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that was coming, and that was like $1,000 or $1,500 a month. That was like, okay, I guess I can live without that. And then when I go, I bought a truck. And in the meantime, I bring the truck back home, and I had planned to go. Did I plan to go somewhere? I think I was, to a movie snowboard festival in France.
Oh, rad.
The Reels or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. So I had bought my ticket to go there, and I get a, I was sending emails like just to be like, hey, what's going on this year? And I sent an email to the same guy at Nitro that I had dealt with the last contract 2 years before. And I get a message back from the other guy from the States that says, yeah, we no longer can afford you. We're going to cut you off, but don't worry, you're not the only one.
Oh, wow.
And turns out nobody else I know got cut.
Oh, shit.
But like no offer for less, no nothing. Over emails.
What a bummer.
So within a week, I had lost all my income, which, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm crying, but it went from I barely don't have to work, and I had spent all my summer at Hood to be relevant and be in the mix and like be like, hey, like I'm actually doing this.
Yeah.
So I did not save any, and I was in Quebec for a lot of it too to edit the movie. So that was like one of the few summers and I didn't work. because I was snow like working at my career, if you want.
Sure.
So that was a bummer, like that chain of event.
Yeah.
And I pulled out my RSP for the following year.
Wow. That sounds devastating, actually. Like, that's a bummer.
Oh, yeah, that was...
And unwarranted. Yeah. Like, what the hell? Jesus.
As much as I'd like to find out, I don't really feel like talking to that team manager.
Right.
It's a weird mixed feeling.
Yeah, there's always some sort of weird justification, right? Like, they had to do it. They had to cut somebody. They had to...
I think the distribution here was also not good.
For Nitro Canada, you mean? Yeah. I think you're right.
It was kind of in a dip, and as like not too long after that, it went back up.
Yeah.
And I met the guy that now runs it, or that I guess he owns the distribution. And last winter, I met him up at Revelstoke, and I was just boiling inside, and we're at dinner having pizza, and I was just like, "No, man, this is all bullshit." And no, we're cool. We're friends, but
oh, that's sick.
I warned my friends. I was like, I don't think I can keep it in. And yeah, over dinner, it got a little tense for a minute.
Yeah. What did he say? Was it
satisfying? It was before his time. So he's like, man, like, I don't know.
He's like, I get it. I get
it. But it's funny
because
not too long after the Canadian distribution for Nitro started hooking up a lot of people and it totally changed. So obviously something happened.
Yeah.
But that was, it was bitter for a minute. Yeah. And it was like my outerwear sponsor too, and bindings. And so basically everything.
Oh, man. So what happens? How do you rebuild?
I didn't really rebuild. I just didn't crumble too much.
Yeah. You just stayed who you are.
Yeah. Well, we knew we were going to do another Deja Vu video. So I was like, well, I'll just give my all to that. And
what board did you ride for the...
At first, I reached out. That was interesting because I reached out to a lot of people I hung out with at Hood that summer.
Yeah.
Pro boarders that are well established, and like asked them for help. Like, could you put some good words for me over there, or give me the team manager email or whatever?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Oh, no.
From anyone I reached out to, I either heard back nothing or like, oh, I'm not sure it's going to work. So that was like, oh man, like really, like that doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
So that was, I think that was almost more hurtful in a way, that you're like, those people they have zero interest in this. Like, why not just help, right?
Of course.
So that was just like, oh man, that's horrible. But I got a hold of Gigi when he was just starting Slash.
Yeah.
And he sent me a few boards, which was rad.
Dope.
They were cool boards. And like, I was pretty excited. I'm like, I don't want any money. Like at that point, I was like, I don't need money.
Yeah,
just,
The
team was so small. I'm like, just put my name next. I was dreaming, I guess, at that point. But like, just put my name next to yours and whoever else is on your pro team.
Sure.
You don't need to give me anything. I just want my name next to
yours.
Yeah,
having the name there. I'm a pro snowboarder.
Yeah, and Slash was having like, I know people looked at it, right?
Yeah.
And
those first year boards were sick. They were really thin in the nose and tail.
Yeah.
And the shape was
boards
epic. Yeah.
Stood out, right?
Totally.
In their own ways.
Yes.
And so I banked on that. So I started the season. And then it was an Olympic season that year.
2010.
14.
2014.
So that was, I guess 2014 is the year I got cut.
Yeah.
Or 13.
Yeah.
But. So through the season, and just like a month prior to the Olympics, they like Slash announced that they have this new kid that's going to the Olympics. I'm like, weird. Like, that's not where I thought that Ren was going to go.
At all. Zero. No, that doesn't make sense, especially at that time.
But for whatever reason. And I was just like, okay, fine. One off, you know, something happens. And Nick Sauvé was also like one of my good friend that we were filming together that year. So we would like talk about Slash and he was also getting it. And mid-season, there's an announcement that Nick is now on the pro teams. I'm like, wait, I'm not getting answers right now. And he just gets bumped to pro team as like, it seems like nothing's happening. So I just kind of get it. Not that there was any true written down like, oh, you're getting this, this and that. But
right.
I just started... be like, oh, this is not where I thought it was going to go. And I guess at some point I reached out to Geno and Jeff at Dinosaurs Will Die because we were always friends. And the reason I didn't ask before is because I still had hope of making money from snowboarding.
Yeah, a huge career somewhere.
So
yeah.
I guess that makes me a sellout in a way, right? Like, but it's like, no, this is
no.
What I'm actually trying to do is live off of snowboarding. So right. That was my rationale at the time. And they're like, yeah, of course. So I got boards and I rode the rest of the season. Did a few things with them at the end of the season and through the summer. And Andrew Burns hit me up in the summer or in the fall. And he's like, hey, man, he's like, would you want to ride for D-Day?
Oh, yeah.
Because he got on D-Day and there was like a few pretty rad guys on it. And that's how Roach got kind of introduced back to snowboarding.
Yes.
Or at least for people that didn't know him and Rankwit. Right. So those were the two big heads in there.
Totally.
And Burns, I think, was helping quite a bit in there.
Yeah.
And put me in touch. He's like, yeah, it's going to be this much money. And like, you do what you want. They just want, you know, rad people, this and that. I'm like, sounds sketch or like sounds like selling your soul, but man, we're doing a 2-year project. I could definitely use $10,000, you know?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So I talk with Geno on the phone for hours and he's like, dude, if they're actually going to go through with it and give you that money, do it.
Right.
Because as much as we may be able to do for you, it's nowhere near that. And we know you have to film a video part.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck. Okay. So I'll do it kind of backwards, but I was hyped because as soon as I said, yes, I'll do it. I got a text message from Roach.
Sick.
Saying, dude, we're so hyped, this and that. I was like, nice. Like that's a payment in itself, right?
Absolutely.
And so through the whole thing, it wasn't too bad. Like I got, the boards were made at Never Summer. So decent boards, like kind of funny look sometimes, but like rolled all right.
Yep.
And they go to SIA. They're like, first day, oh man, we made more sales than we thought we would. And I'm like, cool, yeah. Yeah, they paid for a few things through the year, but like comes the summer and they still owe me more than half of what they owe me.
Right.
Like, yeah, usual, right? The same same shit somewhere else. And yeah, I guess it was like September. He owed me that money, but I was like obviously semi-hyped on it. And and I get on the phone and the way he was talking about how he projected everything, he's like, man, we didn't sell as many boards as we thought. So now we got this plan. We're just going to like give everyone 20 boards and you guys sell them for whatever price you want. You give us back 300 to cover the cost and that we're going to operate like that. So you guys are going to be kind of like rep riders and...
Holy Christ. That sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
Whatever. It was just like, I would have done that 10 years prior, or
yes,
like when I first moved to Whistler, this would have been a good living.
Sure.
But at that point, it's like, no, I'm trying to focus on filming something.
Yeah.
Or I guess at that point I was done hoping to film anything, but like, no, I'm just going to go to work. I'm just going to go lay tiles and actually make a living.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah,
that's what I was doing. And it was just kind of a whole bunch of things. And he's like, dude, it's so hard. This. And I'm like, so I asked him, why do you want to have a snowboard business? He's like, I'm doing this, like, whether it works or not, I want to see this through all the way. I'm like, this sounds like a suicidal move. And I was just like, yeah, okay. And because I knew there was a check in the mail for me and I got it. And one of my friend made a graphic that was supposed to be my pro model and she was supposed to get paid. So I waited till I got a check and she got paid. And she's like, yeah, I got it. I cashed it. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I don't know if I called him or bitch move, texted him and said, hey, I don't think that's going to work. He freaked out. But the next call I made was Geno and telling him, hey, do you have a board for me? And he's like, yeah, I'll give you mine. Like if there's no boards available, you can have mine.
Sick.
And so that's kind of how it went.
Yeah. I mean, that whole fiasco with D-Day, you know.
But it had a lot of potential in a way, but it's fun. Like in that same period, I left, Eric Messier left and Dead Long left not too long after. And it was just... Mm-hmm. I guess it was all similar.
I think a lot of the problems that they had were problems of scale. Like, because there's...
It was the main guy mostly.
Yeah.
Nice guy, but like kind of like he's going to promise you the moon, but it's like, you know, the moon's not going to come.
Right.
But it's hard to say no to the moon.
Right. So even if the sales for a lot of companies that are trying to sell snowboards, let's say you sell 1,000. That's a great, you're like, that's awesome. But the problem is you need $200,000 up front now so that you can carry the 1,000 boards until you get your payment from the people that you sell them to, which you have to sell it to them with 30, 60 day terms. You're not going to get paid for so long. It's like so much money to put out to make enough money to live. It's insane.
Yeah, I don't really know how this could have ever worked, really.
Right. Right.
But it was just whoever was on the team before me, like in the prior year, they did get paid.
Mm.
So as much as I wanted to be skeptical, I knew they did get paid. So
yeah, Andrew got paid and Rankwit did a trip that year.
One of the things that made me say no was like, because Roach was a big chunk of that business, right? At least for the image and the reason for that brand altogether.
Yes.
And he said something like, yeah, Roach kind of wants that same amount of money we were able to pay him last year, but it's no longer possible. So we're looking at doing it without him. I'm like,
oof.
This brand has no purpose if this guy's not there.
Yeah, agreed.
And so I was just like, there's no end goal to, like, this is just kind of a, not a shit show, but like, just like, what is this? Which I don't have with Dino. Like, I was like, well, I should put my energy towards something that I believe in, that I know has been there and is not going anywhere. Yeah, and it felt so good. Like early season, I think they were having a small event at Grouse, and I showed up with a dyno board, and Heaney saw me from across the parking. He's like, "Oh!" And so that was it. Just felt so good. Like, yeah. I felt bad not riding a dyno when I was around them.
Right.
It was like a weird.
Yeah.
Like the Mighty Ducks movie when that one kid goes and play for the other team. You know?
Totally. Yeah, it's such a nice family, the dyno stuff. I like that they're picking up speed. They're doing really well. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, where the challenges go from, can we sell any boards, to like, can we produce the boards that we sold? Like, that's the...
Yeah, it's now more management than like whether or not we can sell it.
That's exactly it. It's this weird spot that companies get to where they're not so big that they can just like rest easy, and they're not so small that it's easy to deal with.
I don't
with.
Think they can ever, anyone can rest easy.
No, no one ever has.
I think it's over.
No one ever has, have they?
Any brand that chills, kind of, they lose sight and
there
and
is no right? chill. You don't, if you hired someone like me to be in charge of your brand, the chill guy who's like, I can't be bothered to Instagram. No, your brand is toast.
Yeah, it seems tricky. It seems stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look at those guys and the workload they have between the two, and it's, yeah, I wouldn't do it. So I'm glad they're doing it for us.
Yeah, I look at you and just the story that you've just told about the tail end of your career, and I'm like, oh God, that would be devastating. I think I would have moved home. I think that would have been my move.
No, I had it's almost like I had less reasons to move home at that point because I had started working.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I had to start working more after I got dropped. But like after like trying for two more years and filming that other Deja Vu movie, like at that point, I had a solid summer job that I could keep on for the winter. So if I went back home, I would not have that good of a job.
Right.
And I don't think it even crossed my mind at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. You seem like you're out here. You're out here for good. There's certain people, you know, like Martin. He's not moving back.
No. But I was never that like a stubborn, I'm living here, you know, that's not how it goes, but it's, we live somewhere that people go on vacation to. That's the bottom line.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So why would you go somewhere to plan more vacations? I live here and I don't need to go on vacation.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of my friends, when they moved back from here, because most of them stayed for like a year and like tried Whistler, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they all moved back to their parents and stacked up. And most of, I say most, but like a good chunk of them, they ended up buying a house, went from their parents' house to owning a house.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much of that was a reason to move back, but like, I don't know. I wouldn't mind living with my parents, but like, I want to live where I want to live. And then what?
Same.
I always made it work. I made it work when I made no money. So of course I can make it work now.
Right.
And while I'm there, I'm like, yeah, I guess there's a way to make it work and be very comfortable and very happy through it. But then I come back and I'm like, okay, no, this is why I live here.
I've never come
and beyond it, there's a lot of aspects to this, but like, yeah, I come back and I never felt like this was a mistake.
I would agree with you on that 100%. Yeah, it's not a mistake. This is such a sick place to live.
And I think my parents understand it as much as they don't like the reality of it.
Yeah.
They've come and visit a few times now. And every time I send a photo to my mom, she's like, man, I want to go back.
Yeah, sick.
So they know. And I'm sure if they could, they would be here in a way, right?
Yeah.
But and so just for that, for all the people I know that wish they had, I don't know, in a different dimension, been able to do it, you know, like, so why don't I do it for those who chose otherwise?
Oh, totally. I agree with you there. Totally. We live in such an incredible zone. I think the first time that I was sort of exposed to how actually awesome it is was Brian at Gucci did like a avalanche training class. He made a slideshow on his laptop and he took it around to different Volcom dealers. It's years and years ago. And I was like, ooh, you know, I can't wait to go to Jackson Hole, right? Like, it's awesome. He's like, dude, the snowstorms you guys get here are like crazy. Like, Jackson can be bony for a long time. Like, and, you know, 2 weeks with no snow, it's sketchy there, you know? Whereas out here, we fairly consistently, you know, touch wood, get good storms and deep storms, and there's a lot of mountain ranges. There's a lot of terrain just so close to where we are.
And even, like, I haven't traveled that much, but traveled to nice places. And every time I come back, whether it's the riding or just the overall impression of where, like, I love Japan. And I want to stay longer when I'm there. But every time I come back from Japan, I'm like, this is pretty good alternative. You know, like I'm fine no longer being in Japan.
Yeah.
Or same for Utah. The powder in Utah is crazy.
Incredible.
But then you'll go to Whistler and because the way the terrain is, you're like, this is it. Or like, I can have many examples, but like, after traveling to the greatest place on earth on many aspects, whether it's the Alps, Japan, Utah, Colorado, maybe not Colorado, but you're like,
Tahoe's one of those places.
It's one of those places I did not go enough.
Yeah, that's rad.
One of my very first trip ever was in Tahoe, but it was in the spring.
Oh, where did you end up riding?
What's North Star? Quite
sick.
A bit. Yeah. It was a sick park back then.
There's a lot of spots down there. It's insane how big that zone is.
Yeah, you had it good last year.
I lucked out. Early season, because everybody was back here just like waiting for snow to fall. And I just wound up there when there was good snow. It was awesome. Yeah, I got to ride Snowbird too. That was so much fun. It's such a trip. Like, snowboarding is, for the snowboarding, that's always been the thing for me is like, well, the whole reason to do it is to snowboard. Like, video parts I can imagine would be stressful and a lot of hard work, but in between you get to snowboard in all these rad spots. Like, that would be the best part of it.
I find that even through our conversations we end up talking about the industry so much that it's almost like that is the core of it, but that's so not the core.
Totally.
I want to compare it to like the planet, how much we consume music. We all listen to music. We all, like, music is essential for a good chunk of the population.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us aren't musicians. So if bands only made their video for their songs for other musicians, like showing technical whatever, or all their videos were explanatory of how they made the songs, they would only get the super nerds music people, you know, that are going to to music school and all that. And in a way, I think in snowboarding, we get caught up in speaking nerd language and like industry language that doesn't apply to, I don't know what the percentage would be. Let's say half of the people who actually buy the snowboards. We don't speak to them enough.
Absolutely.
In a way, like it's,
yeah.
And I don't think I'm any better, but I've, aside from my friends that turned pro, I have always lived with non-professional snowboarders. Once they all moved out, I lived with regular guys who snowboarded every day.
Yeah.
And to hear what they liked in any snowboard videos, who their favorites were, what kind of trick, what kind of board they wanted to actually buy next year because they just watched so-and-so video, was so different than what we in our pro gang or like industry people, what we thought was rad and who would get talked shit on.
Yeah.
Was so off that it's like, again, I shit talk Colorado, but for a lot of people, that's gold, you
sure.
know? And the scene there is very unique. And the snowboarding industry love to shit talk what they see out there because it's so, it's unique. You know,
right.
It's different than Salt Lake. And this,
oh, yeah.
So I don't know. And for whatever reason, like someone might have a good reason, but there's a lack of like eye-to-eye communication with what they're after. And understanding how what they do. They don't care about really what my sponsors were, you know?
Sure.
In a sense, like it's much more like how much snow it snowed last night rather than what's the new what board JV's riding next year, you know? At this point in
I'm
time.
I'm curious.
You know?
Do you have any idea?
I know.
You already know.
I always told something.
Yeah.
So it is what it is.
You'll tell me off mic. I'm excited.
You don't know?
I have no idea.
That's funny.
Yeah. No.
I thought you'd be in the know.
No, man. I'm not really a part of the industry for real. Like
that's great.
You know
See,
what I
that,
mean?
That's...
I really am not. When I go to things that are happening in the industry, especially in Vancouver, then like I know people there. I love those guys. It's great. The industry's awesome.
But it's... In Vancouver, or like because we're talking local,
mm-hmm.
it go for you. You've been around for so long that it, and I think there's a part of it that's industry, but in the end, it's the culture.
Yes,
it's our snowboard culture. It
yes.
includes the industry because it is here.
Yeah.
So when you go up Seymour, you will see some guys that work at
Tony LaFroy.
This
you,
yeah.
You see Tony, you're like cool.
But to me, Tony is not the when I hang out with him, he's not the industry.
No, I hear you.
We may have industry talk, but
yeah.
like he's a part of the Vancouver snowboard
100%
community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of those guys are, which is dope.
And I think that, and that's been my approach more so in recent years. Like, what's the point of, like, I would say that when we'd be building for a day on like. A thing that will create a 4-second clip.
Yeah.
And there's five of us building this where if we all put that same energy up on the hill, creating something for everyone to ride.
It's so dope.
Imagine if that mentality of like what you do with your time and energy was more towards the common good.
The community.
Yeah.
Like you said, community building.
And that applies to more than snowboarding, obviously. But
I'm into that, dude.
I just find the stunts we do is... to a certain degree is non-essential.
Sure. It's a part of it. It's always been a part of it, but it's
yeah.
like, it's
we
a
have
part
to look elsewhere.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
If we wonder why we're either declining or not growing as much as we would wish we did.
Like, yeah. From a guy who rides, I think it's always growing too much. It's like, there's too many people on the hill that like, for me, I'm like, it could shrink. It would be nice if it shrank like by 50%.
And... But sometimes I wonder if if it's growing the traffic. Of course it is because we notice it.
Yeah.
But is it growing the community and the culture? Because it seems like snowboard events, when they did happen, don't bring as many people. So
That's
it's
true.
Like there's a good amount of people who do snowboard may own a season's pass, but don't identify as snowboarders.
That's true.
And I don't know, maybe it doesn't matter, but that's what I grew up on. And I loved when I see it, I love it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you've aligned yourself with some community guys. You know what I mean? Like people that are big into the snowboard community. I think that's cool. I think not just cool. I think it's admirable. I when I'm riding a Ben Billick hit at Seymour, I feel like I'm a part of something. It's dope.
But that's because I rode someone else's hit before, and I was like, okay, I guess we can do it here.
Sure.
And yeah. And, well, and yeah, Seymour kind of plays a big part in how I see it, like just through the events, in like whether or not I was involved, just seeing it and being like, oh, this is how it is. When they had rail jams and always had hot dogs there.
Yeah.
Like Stepchild was doing that quite well. Dino was doing it, and 32 and all the Time Bomb guys. Like there was a way of celebrating snowboarding on like a monthly basis or even a weekly basis sometimes.
Yeah.
That is missing.
Yeah, the Tuesdays, the free women ride Tuesdays. That was so awesome.
I never went.
It was so good, dude.
I guess it wasn't for me anyway.
It was hot dogs. Yeah, no, but it was just like the community was out there. So people would be turning the hot dogs, and you'd take a lap from the top. You might go all the way down, unicorn, come back up, hot dog in the parking lot, go to the car for a beer, back up, mystery.
But that's what we're trying to do with the baked salmon, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's dope.
Whatever reason
you
we
are
need,
doing that, it's perfect.
Like, we just need a reason to make people want to go, but mm-hmm. all we want is a gathering,
which is
illegal now. But that's the main goal. So sometimes it's a quarter pipe, it could be a race, but in the end, it should be nothing, you know?
That's
hey,
true.
Let's all like we share that. Let's,
yeah, we should do it. Whatever, we'll do it with the podcast. I'll put it out there. See you guys Thursday. Thursdays.
You gotta be careful these days, though. You'll get shut down.
Oh, yeah. No, once COVID's over, I mean. Yeah. I forget that we're in a lockdown.
We're 6 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, we're more than 6 feet, eh?
But yeah, that's a... You didn't show up this year, did you? No, you were there.
I was there late because I thought it was canceled. And then I texted Nick, is it going on? I heard it's going on. And then he's like, duh. Like, get up here. And so I raced Artie. He's been working at the shop since I quit. And we have a rivalry. And I beat him at the Office Boys one at Grouse and at
Big Salmon.
I think twice. And so he was like, he was fast. And he is faster than me. That's the thing, is that I cheated a couple times. Or I don't know how I, however I beat him, it wasn't legit. And he legitimately beat me at the Baked Salmon last year. Yeah, kicked my ass.
Were you able to time it?
No, we dropped in from the two different drop-ins at the same time. So it was like whoever gets to the bottom first. And I had my strategy. I was going to air over the one, you know, the spot that where you could air over the corner. So like as you come into the very steep step, there was like a step down right over. And I hesitated. And he got in the landing. I didn't want to land on him. And so then he was ahead of me the whole way. Had I done it, no hesitation, I would have won for sure.
It's interesting how last year, because it got somewhat canceled, turned out to be the in a way, the funnest one.
Sure.
Because we got to ride the thing. Like they actually, it got so fun. And like the hype was, like the energy was good.
Yeah.
Because like the event was canceled. Let's just say it like that. But
yeah,
they ended up running the chair. Although it was windy, like we were just bitching at them, come on, open it up. We worked all week. No, no, no. Ended up opening the chair and they, at like three, they're like, oh, we'll run it till five just because you guys are cool.
Yeah.
But between four and five, no one was riding because we were all so tired.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like we got so much out of that whole thing that you would have never thought that it would ever happen. Like if you think in the previous years, they had to kick us out.
Yeah, yeah.
And last year, we had more than we could chew, really.
That was so dope. Yeah, and it was the session that went on with the hip afterwards. And it's just fun to be in that energy. That needs to happen. Those going back to like the beginning of snowboarding for me, I was shocked that stuff didn't happen all the time. You know, the West Beach Classic was like the OG Whistler event like that. And then it just got, snowboarding got so big that it became like what the TELUS World Ski and Snowboard Festival or whatever it was. And it just was like, it wasn't
well,
the same.
It became so good that someone else took over. Or like, I think it's Whistler that said, hey, you know what, West Beach, you guys don't do it. We will do it. I think that's kind of how it went.
Well, West Beach was like struggling. So they stopped doing it. And then it was the Sims Invitational for a year.
and then Orage. So I think they just went for the highest bidder.
Probably, yeah.
But that's beyond my pay grade.
Well, yeah, yeah. Being involved in, there was an indoor quarter pipe in Vancouver 1 year. It's gnarly.
Was that the one Guy Deschain won with the air to fakie?
Possibly.
Because I had a photo, one of the first photos.
Is there wood in at the top of the quarter
scaffolding.
Pipe? Yeah.
One of the very first photo I found on the internet of snowboarding was him. It must have been the year he won the quarter pipe contest, I guess.
Yeah.
But air to fakie just in an angle that you're like, he's going to fall on his back. But no, that was just how he poked his
indies. That's so sick.
And I printed it. So I had that as like, you know, like my first experience with playing with computers really was printing that. And it was in my bedroom for a while.
Oh, that's so sick. Do you know him now?
No. No, he's kind of off the grid.
He's hiding out, him and his girlfriend.
But my roommate, and when I moved to Whistler, when we all bought sleds, he bought Guy's sled.
Oh, that's so sick.
Just randomly from the newspaper.
I want to have him on the show.
So that's as close as I got to him.
Yeah, I want to have him on the show for sure.
But legendary. We call when someone does air to fakie, we call it a Guy Deschain.
I love that.
Because that he's just so solid.
Yeah, yeah. I love that guy. I met him up in Whistler years and years and years ago. But we didn't get to ride with him. We were doing some industry thing, you know, shooting for a cigarette commercial or something.
Oh, actually, that's the one you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Cigarette commercial. It's gnarly.
Random fact. Yesterday, I went to Seymour.
Yeah.
And ran in, like in the parking lot, I ran into Jake Kennedy Deck and Jed Anderson. They're all going snowboarding together, in which they have been all week, I guess.
Yeah.
But I had not seen Jake in, I don't know how many, not Jake, but Jed in so many years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or snowboarded with him, like even more. I don't know. That was sick.
That's
like,
so
it was
fun.
Like a video grass reunion plus Kennedy.
That was incredible.
That was a good first day.
Oh, that's super sick. Yeah, I'm going to have Kennedy on the show. Because of sponsorship stuff, because of Vans. Vans is like, you want to have, I'm like, yeah, for sure. Of course.
That's a good one.
You're going to have to help me with that one because I've got nothing. Yeah, what do I have to watch?
It's more talk. Like if I was in front of Mikey LeBlanc, I could talk about the stuff I saw because I grew up on it. But if it's just one of the 100 things you watch this year, then it doesn't have the same value, right?
I agree with you there.
So it's more like what makes you and what you understood from the feedbacks you got from maybe a few people you reached out to or whatever.
Sure.
I don't know.
I feel like we captured a good part of Ben in this. How do you feel about it?
Decent.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we covered pretty much the whole career. It was devastating hearing you talk about the sponsorships, though.
That's funny you didn't know. But at the same, that's one thing. I've only really talked about it in one interview in King Snow.
Yeah.
But the way we did the interview, it was kind of like, it was like an analogy, like getting dumped by a girlfriend. So the whole interview was like not directly saying exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And I think I regret, like at the time I was trying to be quiet about the whole thing because I didn't want to sound like a spoiled person that's not getting his candy and whatever.
Right.
But I think at the same time I regret not being transparent and saying, hey, this brand sucks.
Sure.
This brand really pulled a shitty move here. That's
right.
That you hear sometimes and you're like, oh, that's not cool. And that happened to me and I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm. I like that, you know, you had to ask for your raise when you got your raise. Like,
Every time I had to ask for something.
Yeah.
Which I think is fair in a way. Like, of course, they're not going to just hand you the money. You need to be like, no, I think I'm worth more. So,
you know what? We can agree to disagree on that. I think if your company is on top of it, then you know. If the guy's worth more money, you know. And then
I know, but I also, to my, this didn't help me, but I also never tried to make connections with other brands and see what else was out there through my whole career. While I was getting paid, I was just like, no, that, like, I actually like Nitro. I want to stick around. So I never covered my back. So, and maybe they knew that in a way that, oh, we don't need to give him more because he never said he had a counter offer anywhere else.
Right.
And I guess that's just business and that's fine. It's like, it's like any job. If you don't ask for a raise, your boss isn't, unless he's scared you're going to leave, he's not going to run after you and offer you a raise.
It's a strange dynamic, isn't it? You know that Bo Bishop is a global am? Like, I was like, what? Seriously?
They'll never turn him pro.
Why not?
Because that's how they do it.
I want to start a petition to turn him pro. Like, it's so silly. Why wouldn't you not? Like, he's as pro as any of the guys that he rides with.
Just look at, I mean, if we want to get back in the industry, just look at Canada in general. It took Belzil 15 years on K2, I think, to turn pro.
Mm-hmm.
There's no Canadians on 32 pro team.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you look back in history, like, they had a lot of big names. Even Laurent was on 32.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to put him on the team, so he quit to do Rome boots.
Unreal.
Like, I don't know. There's so many examples of Canadians that got
fucked
over.
I'd love to talk about Laurent, because he's one of those guys that I, when he disappeared, it was like, where the fuck did he go? Like, it was like, 1 year, he's my favorite guy. Did he get a terrible injury or something? And then you hear his interview with Jody, and you're like, holy shit, he just kind of quit.
I have a very different vision of everything. And it's funny, like, I was listening to his interview, and I was there for a lot of those stories he told.
Of course.
And I remember them more than he did.
Right.
Like, man, you forgot a big chunk there. And it's been like that, like, our whole lives. So that's pretty funny.
Right. Right. Was he, like, did he know he was as good as he was? I think that's the thing I've heard.
Like, he was just naturally talented. He was,
yes,
not, like, by default, better than everyone when he was doing whatever he did.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, naturally talented and never really had to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his passion and his drive was sufficient, mm-hmm, for a long time. And I think as soon as he saw others doing things that he wasn't doing yet, he felt like he was not as good as them. And that instead of pushing harder, he went the other way.
Yeah.
Saying, like, he no longer cares.
That's a lot of people.
Probably convinced himself that he didn't care, like,
right,
slowly, and, like, regressing in that sense.
Totally.
But skills were always there. It's funny because it was this one session we did where he was just doing lip slides, pretending like that's all that matters. I'm just going to do lip slide, where all the boys were doing, like, next level shit.
Yeah.
Just, like, doing things they've never done, and kind of, like, to prove a point, he was simply doing lip slides all day. And then we went back for a second day on that same spot, and we're like, come. And I think overnight, like, we had probably conversations on that evening, and he was like, man, I should have done more or whatever. And we're like, yeah, why didn't you do cab 270 and back side 270? Like, you can do that. He's like, no, I can't. And the next day we're just like, no, yeah, you can. And he did both, like, within a few tries.
Oh, wow.
Like that. And that's always been like that. I think the first or second kink rail we hit together, down, flat, down.
Yeah.
I was doing 50-50s and I board slid it. But he was like, no, I'm going to front board it. No practice. Like, he wasn't, like, doing 50s and then eventually moved on. Like, he went there and he's like, that's what I'm doing. And he front boarded down, flat, down.
Phew.
Like, and that, yeah, we were 16 or something at the time, you know?
His style was just insane.
Yeah, like, but, like, just his level of what he was comfortable doing was already ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as soon as he tried something, he would get it. That was just not, there was never any, like, oh, let's see if I can do this. It's like, no, he had it.
That's so dope.
And,
that's so dope.
Last year for Christmas, like, we try to gather normally when I'm in town, they kind of make an effort to all get together. But in the winter, we try to go snowboarding.
Yeah.
And that was his first time, I think, in 3 years that he was able to come with us.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, let's all meet up at this chair. But he went on the other chair and took one or two laps by himself just to see if he was still capable, because he didn't know.
Yeah,
or, like, doubted himself.
Yeah, 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 totally. Totally.
So and I think that's representative of how he was the whole time anyways. Like, he was always unsure of his capacities.
One of the best to ever do it. LMP, are you kidding me? Like, unfucking believably talented.
And he never stood out as like a jump guy. But
right.
And the funny thing is, like, we grew up snowboarding with helmets, and when we started filming for Sugar Shack and like being on Rome, the rep said, if you guys wear helmets, I don't think it's going to make it in the movie.
Wow.
So we started taking it off for certain things. But for me, like between us, we were just like, if we're jumping, we're going to wear the helmets.
Yeah.
And he just slowly just didn't put the helmet back on and also avoided the jumps.
Interesting.
And so which way was it? Was it that he didn't want to jump or he didn't want to accept to wear the helmet? I don't have the answer, but like that was progressive, obviously.
Yeah.
And like he's much better than me at jumping. If he had ever actually put energy towards jumping, like he'd be as good as anybody else that we know that is a good jumper.
Unbelievable. It's that evolution versus progression thing.
Yeah, you know? His evolution was not always progressive in a way.
Right, like, right.
But within the street area, yeah, he was. But yeah, as soon as like, and like he actually pulled out of snowboarding because he was having kids.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, mm-hmm. That's a big thing.
It's huge.
And I don't think he wanted to do it halfway.
Yeah.
And obviously seeing like things decreasing, like pay cuts here and there, like nothing major, but like...
Yeah, instability in the industry, right.
Like, yeah, what's the most stable future, the snowboard thing or
yeah.
trying to move on? And really, like, you have to have the personality with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like, I think also it's normal at a point that you may feel like you've done what you had to do, right?
Right.
I achieved all my goals. What else is there in that snowboarding platform that I want to achieve? Like maybe he had done what he wanted to do and everything else might be a little bitter because it's redoing it or feeling like you're no longer as good or whatever it is. Like it's normal to have different interests and want to push that at some point, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you're driven by progression, at some point you're going to be bummed on yourself because you're not going to go to a spot that's lesser than a spot you've already done before and do some trick that's less than some trick that you've already done.
But I think that's, it's not always from yourself. It's like, what, my sponsors still want me to film another video part?
Right.
Like you're not as stoked on the idea. You're like, man, I wish there was another way to express what I feel for snowboarding yeah. other than chucking myself down the stairs or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever have any of that kind of J.P. Walker style PTSD? Like if you've been injured at a, like on a jump or on a feature and then been like, fuck, roll back up to something like that and be like, I'm actually scared.
Not really. But you know, in his thing, in his interview, he says, it's either you get hurt or you lose your sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's people don't support you. For me, it was like I felt like I was finding a new direction in my snowboarding that I was like, no, I'll actually, I think I'm only getting better.
Yeah.
And less scared and more comfortable with what I was doing.
Totally.
So it was kind of the opposite. I guess give me two more years, maybe I would have got to the PTSD part of things. But
well, now you probably have PTSD from losing your sponsors, right? Like,
yeah, I guess a bitterness and like a reality check that. And it's funny now I talk to younger kids that are trying to make it. I'm like, dude, just do what you want to do because in the end, it's not worth the energy necessarily that you put towards it. As far as money, like even if you do make 30, 40 grand off of snowboarding for 2 years, like you invested five.
Totally.
So do it on your own pace, the way you want, with the people you want to do it. And if you're good enough and they still want you while you're doing this, then it'll be a fun road, I think.
Yeah. Dion De La Salle did that out here, out of Vancouver. He did it his own way. He set his own limitations and it was crazy to see. Because at that time, it was just the Wild West. You know what I mean? You sign a contract. It was more on your, you know, if you had a big personality, you could sign a big contract and then not even have to do anything. Look at Brushy on Ride. he signed a huge contract, probably the biggest that had ever been signed at that point. And then he didn't really do anything.
It was a little late for him.
Yeah, but it was a lot of money, so that's...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, for sure. But, like, for me, I wish I had snowboarded for myself more through the time that I was getting paid to snowboard. And maybe different things would have come out of it, you know? Different inspiration, different... all those things. So, and I think that's my biggest regret more than anything else, really, is to not take the... Like, I was telling Jake yesterday how I... up until like 2 years ago, I never went up sledding just for fun. When we went up was for filming.
Right.
And so you never get to enjoy, you never get to practice, you never, like, you skip so many steps, really. Like, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I hear you, dude. It's pressure from the industry, pressure from yourself, right? Like,
mostly, I think. Yeah. You think that's what they want because it's not written down what they want.
Right. You got to make it up. That's where I'm at with this thing. It's like,
and
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
it's know freestyle more than we think, basically.
Yeah.
Like someone will tell you should do it that way.
Oh, totally.
And you will believe that person and go that way and it won't feel good or it may work, may not work.
Well, I was trying to do the thing that you were talking to, like alluding to in the beginning, like having that really good research. It's really fun to listen to an interview where somebody knows something and pulls it up and the guest is like, wow, that's... You did your research, man. And as much as I'd love to do that, it's not
into, if it's not you.
Yeah, it's not in, but there's a part of me that's like, whoa, Ben wants that. That's the best way to do it. I got to start doing it that way.
No, what I said was that's something that this guy's bringing up.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And I think that's his recipe, and that's why I appreciate it. And, and for the same reason I appreciate, you know, different things, and that's why there's room. That's why there's room for many podcasts. Really,
there's so much room for, especially on podcasts. And then the same thing goes for pro riders.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you know what? The thing that I love about your crew the most is the idea that you held each other to this really high level because you saw the potential in each other. Like when you're talking about LMP, you admired his riding. He was better than he thought he was, you know? It's crazy. And then Louif, it's like, holy shit, you know? And you, this exact same. And so, like, going all the way back to Etienne, just holding yourself to that higher level. Like, oh, you feel that? You know, when you're not on point with your trick, you can feel it. That's up to you. Nobody else is going to tell you that. But then you guys had a crew.
We did say that.
Yeah. And it hasn't happened very often. You know what I mean? It hasn't happened in the industry very often.
Yeah, there's, as much as we may think that there's a lot of shit talk on like the message board, there's not much truth telling in person.
Absolutely.
In general. Like,
absolutely.
Team manager's hype. Yeah. Until he totally cancels you on an email the next day. You know?
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, there's not enough communication, like truth. You know?
Right. Yeah. I think it was in the LMP one with Jody. They talked about being at a spot and trying to get the trick, trying. And then all of a sudden your crew starts like clapping a little extra loud, even though you didn't get it nailed because they just like want to go home. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that one was perfect.
Yeah, that's horrible.
That's like, it's mean is what it actually is.
But also that there is crews when you're not with your core crew that... Yeah. They think that you should be hyped on that, or they just want to be nice, but they don't know what you're actually trying to achieve.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm super psyched that you did the show because I've been after you for a couple of years, and I've been watching the way that you snowboard in the world, and it's inspiring. It's dope. It's always a good day if you're up there. I'm like, yeah,
nice.
Ben's ripping.
I appreciate that. But I just thought that the more we know each other, actually, the better the interview would be.
Sure, man. Yeah, this was super fun. I'm really, really hyped on this.
Thanks for dinner.
Thanks for coming down. Evan Rad shoutouts this week to Ben Billock. Thanks for doing the show. And thank you, Dinos Will Die. Dinos is a Vancouver-based snowboard company with super fun shapes and graphics. Please check them out at dinosaurswilldie.com. Special thanks this week to my old friend Dustin Varga for working super hard on a 2-year video project in Jackson Hole. It's called Hive Mind and it's up on YouTube right now, so please look it up. It's a trip and it features his next door neighbor, Travis Rice, plus Lance Pittman and some aliens, featuring music Dustin composed. This art piece is a fun one. Hive Mind on YouTube. Support snowboarders who snowboard and make art. And be sure to come back next week for another episode of the Effenrad Snowboard Podcast, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.